You're listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Joshua's House is the name of a hospice house in Sacramento for terminally ill people who are experiencing homelessness. The Health Communication Research Institute has been the driving force behind Joshua's House for 3 years, and its founder and the energy behind the project is Dr. Marlene von Friedrichs-Fitzwater. She's in the studio today. Hi, Dr. Fitzwater. Glad to have you here.
Hi, Beth. Thank you for having me.
Can you give me a picture of the terminally ill and homeless in Sacramento and the numbers of people who experience this happening at the end of their life?
Well, as you know, we have an increasing number of the homeless in Sacramento, unfortunately, and many of them are older. But even the young people are experiencing a lot of chronic illnesses because they're not getting medical care and they're out in the environment, and that makes conditions worse. So we're losing 1 to 3 people a week who die on the streets. And while some of them die of overdoses or for other reasons, an increasing percentage are dying from chronic terminal illnesses like cancer, heart disease, COPD, things like that.
Say more about that. What are the common causes of death for people who are living with homelessness?
Probably the number one cause in terms of dying from chronic disease would be cancer. Because by the time they're diagnosed, they're often at late stage. And so it's much harder to treat them. They also can't always get in for treatment, and so they're not getting the level of treatment that you or I might get. So once they are diagnosed, they tend to die fairly quickly. But the primary cause would be cancer, I think.
I saw a statistic that surprised me, and that was that the number of people dying alone on the streets is actually higher than the number of people who die in emergency rooms or in hospitals as an inpatient. Is that true?
That's true. That is true. And I think people just don't think about that. You know, everyone I've talked to about Joshua's House is so surprised that there isn't a place for people who are homeless and dying to go. There is an assumption that they just go to a hospital or they go somewhere and they're taken care of. And since hospice now is delivered in people's homes instead of in a hospital wing or some other setting, if you don't have a home, then you don't have access to hospice. So folks just aren't aware of that.
So this type of a hospice house is unusual across the country, isn't it?
It is. It is. We'll be the first one on the West Coast and I think the 7th in the country.
How did Joshua's House get named? It sounds like there's a story there.
Well, there is. In 2014, I lost a grandson who I was very, very close to, who died on the streets in Omaha, Nebraska, and he died of an overdose. But he was a very loving and compassionate and caring young man, and he would see the people dying around him of cancer or heart disease. And he knew I was a cancer survivor, so he'd talk to me a lot about that, about how that just shouldn't happen. There should be a place for them to go and be cared for. So when I lost him, his name was Joshua, and so this is in his memory and something he couldn't accomplish in his short life, but I'm doing it for him.
And what was your initial vision when you thought of honoring him in this way? What did you want to have happen?
Well, I wanted to create a facility like this, and I assumed there were other facilities. First of all, I thought there could be somewhere here that was already offering this service. But when I did my research, I discovered there wasn't anything locally, and there were only at that time 5 other places in the United States that provided hospice care to terminally ill homeless folks. And the newest one was in Salt Lake City, so I spent a lot of time both visiting there and talking to the director and getting ideas and thoughts from her. And so it just began to take a vision, became a vision in my mind, and then got the community involved, created a community advisory committee and spoke to the city. Mayor Steinberg was just coming in as mayor, had a meeting with him. with Jeff Harris, a District 3 city council member, and they just were so supportive and so eager to help. And it really told me that I was on the right path, going in the right direction, and this needed to happen.
I'm talking with Dr. Marlene Fitzwater. She is an adjunct professor in the Master's in Public Health program at the University of San Francisco campus in Sacramento. She's a former associate professor at the UC Davis School of Medicine and professor emeritus at California State University. So she has moved forward with this plan for Joshua's House. You hit a few bumps in the road. I think the place to start with is that you identified and purchased property at 1501 North C Street.
Yes, that's true.
And then there was some pushback. There was a challenge to that location. So then you had to revisit the city council for approval. And the approval came in May, or officially in June, correct?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So the way has been paved to purchase the property and file the building permits. Now what happens?
Well, we're right at that point. We did purchase the building on June 22nd, and we did receive unanimous approval from the City Council and the City Planning Commission, despite some protests from some of the neighbors. And so now we're submitting the building permit application, and once we have that, we can begin construction. So we have contractors and tradespeople and folks lined up to begin construction. We're predicting about a 9 to 10 month construction period if we don't run into any problems, and hope to open in early 2019.
The location is in the area where there are other compatible services. Mustard Seed School is there. What else works about the location, and ultimately how many beds will you have?
What works about the location is its proximity to Loaves and Fishes, which has some resources that we can share. We like the area because they have historic buildings. The building we purchased is a historic building, and we love the idea of bringing it back to its full glory, the way it looked when it was built. And we're going to have 20 beds, and we'll also have a library, a chapel, a multi-purpose room. We want to bring in things like art therapy and music therapy, because you die physically, but you can do a lot of healing in that process. And our residents will have some of that healing work they may want to do, and we want to allow them that possibility, and to leave something after they're gone, a piece of art or a piece of music, something that can live on after they die.
Will this be a facility for men and women?
Yes.
And tell me how or what agency will work with you, excuse me, to be able to navigate placement.
We have all four health systems on board as partners, which is a wonderful collaboration. Our residents will come through the hospitals, who will make a diagnosis of a terminal illness and confirm that the person, their patient, is homeless. And then they will be discharged into Joshua's House if the person consents to come in and wants to come into Joshua's House. So we will be a locked, secured facility for the protection and safety of our staff and our residents. So people will come in through the hospitals, the four local hospitals. And that was a concern some of the neighbors had about the possibility of attracting huge crowds of people who would camp out in front and want to come in. And we didn't want that to happen either. So they'll come in through the health systems.
Hospice usually comes in the final 6 months of a person's life. And I think being able to identify that if someone is living with homelessness is very difficult. And there are funding needs, too. So with all that you're trying to do, how can people help? What can people do to assist you in this?
Well, there are a lot of ways to help. They can volunteer through our website, and we have a wonderful long list of volunteers eager to help once we open. We do sponsor some fundraising activities. We have an art exhibit coming up at the East Street Gallery and a reception and silent auction this Saturday, August 11th, from 5 to 9 at the East Street Gallery. We put on a benefit concert once a year, so there are fundraising activities that we need volunteers for, and we need the public to come and support us. And we do have a lot of naming rights in the building, so if an organization wanted to name the library or name the multipurpose room with a donation, that would be wonderful. I've always tried to keep this a community-based facility and program. I want the community to feel they own it and to be involved, and so there are some wonderful opportunities to do that.
In your own life, Dr. Fitzwater, do you think your own Joshua could have found a way to a facility like this? Would this have been something that might have helped him?
It certainly could have. While he didn't die of a terminal illness, he died of an overdose. I think the other thing, if he could have lived long enough to accomplish this, it would have certainly changed his life too, because he was a very giving and compassionate person, and this would have given him a mission.
Mm. Well, it's a project that a lot of people know about. I'm glad we were able to get you to join us here in the studio, be able to talk about it. And again, I'll direct people to this Saturday, the event that you have at the East Street Gallery, which includes that silent auction. It's from 5 to 9 p.m. And we'll post a link to Joshua's house for people to find more information.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you so much, Beth.
Thank you. And let's have the follow-up conversation when the doors are opening, okay?
Oh, I would love to do that. Thank you.
That is Dr. Marlene von Friedrichs Fitzwater. And again, we'll post the link to Joshua's house and information about Saturday's event at capradio.org/insight. You're listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio.